Uganda.
Good evening to you and welcome to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. My name is Abraham Asari. In tonight's edition, court rules on the biometric registration process. How is the Electoral Commission going to proceed? What is wrong with the $3 billion loan already approved by Parliament? The minority raises a new red flag. And what happens to junior high graduates who fail to make it to the next level of education? Why do they keep failing? Our text line is 024-2523-066. The text line again is 024-2523-066. And we are live on the internet at gbcghana.com. When all thought the dust had settled on the $3 billion Chinese loan saga, the minority in Parliament, they reignited the debate at the news conference. They are raising concerns about aspects of the loan and its intended disbursement. For some observers, why is the NPP coming back after the approval of the loan? Are there new developments that warrant these concerns? Behind the News explores the issue, and joining us on the line now is Dr. Anthony Akotose, Minority Spokesperson on Finance. Good evening to you, Dr. Ose.
A very good evening to you too.
And welcome to Behind the News. So, what are the new issues? Is there anything new from what we had heard before the approval of the loan by Parliament?
There are two additional fundamental issues that worry us greatly. The first one is relating to the fact that the facility that has been approved by Parliament is in violation of the Petroleum Revenue Management Act that we in Parliament have enacted. That's Section 18, Clause 7, which says that you cannot collateralize the annual budget funding amount for 10 years, for not more than 10 years. But the tranche A of the Chinese loan has a tenure of 15 years in clear violation of this act that Parliament has passed. First, that violation troubles me as a parliamentarian. Second, the Chinese themselves in the facility agreement had asked the government to undertake that the passage of the loan does not violate any act of Ghana. So the Chinese themselves will be worried that this is a violation of the act. And that worries us greatly. I, as a parliamentarian, am embarrassed that this is what the Act of Parliament raises issues with our credibility and the way we conduct our business.
Did you raise these issues before the loan was passed?
Well, I mean, the issue is not whether or not I raised the issues. It's the government that is bringing the loan, and it must know what is legal and what is not. The government has an attorney general.
But we have a finance committee in Parliament. I'm sure that this issue came before the committee.
When the loan came, we had a period of time where we were looking at it. There were so many issues that were being raised that we didn't get to be heard on all those issues. We started raising issues regarding contents of the agreement and so forth and so on. So we didn't get to look at all the issues. But I think the burden is not on the minority to raise the issues. The burden is also on government to make sure that any undertaking they have made, they've asked advice from the Attorney General.
But I'm sure the reason why these things are brought to Parliament is for proper scrutiny and for issues like this, if they exist, to be brought up.
Before you bring something to Parliament, you yourself must know that what you are doing does not violate your laws. If Parliament has made a mistake and not caught your mistake, it doesn't mean that you are not responsible. The government is firstly responsible for checking that it had made sure that no law was broken. So you cannot give any excuse.
But what is the meaning of the five-year moratorium that this loan has?
No, the five-year moratorium does not mean that you start paying interest on the loan. The five-year moratorium relates to the principal. Do you understand that?
Yes, please go ahead.
So the interest gets, once you execute the agreement, the interest payments become due for 15 years.
But,
and it is the ABFA which is used to pay the interest. So it's a clear violation. So anybody that says that there's a five-year moratorium does not understand or is pretending that they don't understand. The interest payments will be due. So if you are paying interest on the loan, how can you say that it means there's a 5-year moratorium. It's probably wrong.
Please explain to me the 5-year moratorium. Does it mean that the interest will start accruing from day one, but will not pay until after 5 years?
My brother, when you take a loan, you start paying interest. It means you are making payments on the loan.
Mm-hmm.
Interest payment is one part. Principal is another part. But interest payment, I mean, look, the whole interest payment is 1.278 billion. And it's been paid for 15 years. And you have collateralized the loan for 15 years. You can't escape that. So I don't think anybody can use the 5-year grace period as an excuse. The second issue relates to the fact that the government has given an undertaking to the IMF that for 2011, it will not acquire any commercial loan to exceed $800 million. It has made an undertaking to the Chinese that it is not in breach of any agreement with the IMF. This is clearly wrong.
But then, this is a sovereign country. Do we need the IMF to put a ceiling on how much you can borrow?
Well, that's not the issue. Whether we need or not, the fact is that we have an agreement with them. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
If we didn't have an agreement with them, then this issue is not our right. But don't forget that just in June of this year, the IMF approved a loan close to about $95 million and disbursed it to us on the basis of our undertaking that will not contract loans to exceed $800 million. So if we have, then we are in breach of that agreement.
And are there any repercussions for breaching that agreement?
What's that?
Do we have any? Are we going to suffer for being in breach of that agreement?
We could potentially, because don't forget, the IMF has called the minister when they had the annual meetings. He's been in Washington. I don't know if he's back or not. But this issue would have been discussed in Washington. The outcome, I don't know. But in a typical IMF program, either you don't contract the loan, or you have to find justification for the IMF to waive that breach of the law. I don't know what's going to happen, but from experience, my own guess is that the government will have to not sign the loan agreement, or will have to change the terms. But that is yet to be seen, because this has happened before where when we breached a loan, we've had to pay back before. So I'm very worried. And I know that the IMF cannot go back to their board unless there's a very good explanation for why we've done this.
Okay, Dr. Kutose, let's see whether an explanation from the government will help ease your worries. So if you could just hold on briefly, let's find out from Fifi Kwete, who is the Deputy Minister of Finance. Good evening to you, Mr. Kwete. Welcome to Behind the News. What's your response to the minority's concern?
Good evening to you and to all your many listeners, and good evening to my big brother, Dr. Kutose.
My brother, how are you?
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I know you've been busy.
Yes, that's true. I didn't hear the beginning of the submission, and also didn't have the privilege of listening to all the answer. I've not actually heard the press statement, so let me just say, on the back of the little I've heard, okay,
I think the main thing is that their concern is that we are violating the Petroleum Management Act, which says that we should not collateralize the oil for more than 10 years. And for the Chinese loan, the duration of the loan is 15 years. You have a 15 years limit.
Tranche A.
Okay, I'm sure you got that right.
The IMF loan. I mean, take that part again.
I mean the Chinese loan of $10 billion, or $3 billion.
The facility.
Yes, that we.
The facility of $3 billion.
Yes, and then we have collateralized with our oil for 15 years, but by the law, that is the Petroleum Management Act, it should not be more than 10 years.
Anyway, let me try to answer some of the concerns. First and foremost, listening to Dr. Akwato's submission, it is a fact. It is a fact that we clearly are within a program that is working with the IMF, and therefore, whatever facilities we are going to raise from whichever part of the world has to be done with the approval of the IMF. That's the first one. It is also the fact that within the program, we always have a certain window for especially what you call commercial borrowing, meaning you are borrowing facilities that are more expensive than the normal concessionary IDA facility, which are normally very long-term and also relatively very soft in terms of how much interest you pay. It is true. Now, however, the fact that IMF conditionalities or IMF program, I mean, has what you call room for discussion And as you rightly mentioned, you also have possibilities of getting waivers that can enable you to do more than what the program strictly envisages. And we have not been unconscious of this at all. Let's explain the reason why this particular facility is one that we are confident that we will have the necessary waiver that will be able to enable the country to have it. One, we are looking at facility, the $3 billion facility, for the most part is being secured for projects that have capacity to self-finance themselves, okay? It's not what you call strictly long-term project that sometimes will take too long to relate to us if we bring back, I mean, the necessary return. Now, take, for example, the gas infrastructure, I mean, which is one of the major projects that this particular financing is supposed to help do. Now, this gas infrastructure, from the feasibility studies and so on that are in place, it will not take even maximum 2 to 3 years, the gas infrastructure should be able to generate the necessary financing to be able to retire every single loan that has been contracted.
And have you explained this to the IMF already? Or you are yet to do that?
Of course.
And have they given you the green light to go ahead and take this loan?
Excuse me. Let's take this progressively so that the people of Ghana can appreciate. Through this particular period, in Washington, we've had what you call a number of discussions at which the IMF, first of all, they knew about this because they visited the country, at which we explained the whole details to them. And of course, the opportunity of the annual meeting was another opportunity to be able to go into more detail. And this discussion has been done at the highest level, not just with the IMF, but also with the World Bank. Because remember, anything that had to do with development of the nation strictly falls within the World Bank ambit. The IMF is much more about making sure that your finances are in place and so your debt sustainability issues are appropriate. But the World Bank is the single institution in charge of the development and the transformation of economy and pursuing growth agenda. And you would have heard, okay, because the World Bank has openly endorsed this loan, stated their total approval for this facility, and the World Bank, even during this annual meeting, has been in the forefront of championing this particular facility because they do know how transformational this facility is going to be for Ghana's economy, how vital it is that this facility is secured as a way of bringing about the necessary, platform infrastructure that can bring about transformation.
So what we can say
is that the discussions are pretty encouraging. And then, of course, the IMF has what you call specific ways of going about their thing. They don't just stand up within a meeting and say we have granted you waivers. So we need to go through those timelines that the IMF normally operates by. But we are confident that with the support, especially of the World Bank, that has been behind us throughout this process, we should be able to.
But do you really think that the World Bank's approval or support would give you an approval from the IMF?
The IMF and the World Bank are twin institutions. When you have the endorsement of one of the two, it is very important, especially when you are doing projects that have capacity to be able to, give you the necessary returns to retire those facilities quickly. The World Bank clearly, support becomes very instrumental in making sure the waivers are done. To be honest with you, even the IMF themselves are pretty much certain that this particular facility, especially the portions that have to do with the gas infrastructure and those that are very important infrastructure that on their own can provide quick returns to be able to pay back, per se are not a problem at all. Some of their worries rather have to do with the fact that if it is the Ghana is able to get this particular waiver, possibly other countries might want to jump within the same bandwagon. But of course, they do appreciate as well that Ghana's case is peculiar. We're talking about a nation that arguably for this year is posting the highest possible growth, which growth levels tend to continue next year. So they do know that they are dealing with a country that has a very peculiar situation and whose economy is showing absolutely phenomenal.
I'd like us to take a response from Dr. Akotose, but before we do that, I just want to find out from you why we should violate our own laws, which say that we shouldn't collateralize our oil for more than 10 years, and we are going to do that.
I don't really understand what the entity is talking about collateralizing our that we have what you call a rule that we should not collateralize our oil beyond. I don't exactly understand this. The import of that. What I really want to do is to take time to study exactly what it is they are saying
Okay,
so let's listen to Dr. Kutose to explain what you're saying. Mm. Maybe that will help the discussion.
The Petroleum Revenue Management Act, Section 18, Subclause 7, says that you cannot use the annual budget funding amount to collateralize loans for more than 10 years. The tranche A of the Chinese loan for $1.5 billion has a tenure of 15 years, which means that the interest payments, if it's assigned, will be due after it's assigned for 15 years. That is the violation. The grace period issue does not matter because it's only principal, but the interest will become due. So that is the violation of the law that we passed. And more importantly, in the master facility agreement, the Chinese asked the government to do an undertaking that we are not in breach of a law in Ghana, but this is a breach. So the Chinese themselves will be worried that that undertaking may not be correct, and we have to find a way to correct that. That is the basically. So the first tranche A loan is what is in breach. The second one for 10 years is okay. The first one for 15 years is not okay.
I guess this is subject to different interpretation. Because
it's not subject to interpretation.
I can tell you exactly what I feel about it. Okay, first and foremost, the issue of a moratorium. Okay, the issue of a moratorium. It is the truth that even during the period of moratorium, interest has to be serious.
Yes.
When we're talking about moratorium, the reason why moratorium becomes critical is because the bulk of the payment is not going to kick in until after the 5 years, because it is when the principal portion joins the interest, that is when really you start having a toll as far as national capacity to service the loan is concerned. So that's why it gives you a breather. And you clearly know that moratorium, the meaning of moratorium means you're getting a breather. So by
the moratorium, if interest were not being paid over 15 years, then it would be okay. But the interest is part of the payment on the loan.
Yeah, I know. But Doc, what?
So the collateral for 15 years is not the right way to do it. If the moratorium is on principal and interest together, it will be okay. But it's not.
Yeah, but the important thing is this. If we're looking at a loan, let's say, for example, the total quantum of the loan being, let's say, 100%. If out of that 100, 80 or so percent is going to start being serviced after the first 5 years, the national coffers clearly has quite a lot of briefer. And that, for me, is the most important thing.
The fact that payment on the loan is beginning immediately for 15 years is the problem.
So the secretary said, if that is the case,
interest were also being held in abeyance, it would be okay. But
if the economy can comfortably manage the interest, the economy can comfortably manage it.
The law is specific. It says do not collateralize for more than 10 years, and the collateralization involves both principal and interest.
The point about the collateralization is where exactly I'm having a bit of a disagreement. I mean, in what way are we talking about collateralization in this case?
We are using the annual budget funding amount.
No, but Doc, don't forget, the agreement with the Chinese has to do with making sure that we are committing in terms of like how much we want to pay for the facility, and this facility is going to pay a market rate.
The agreement is very clear.
Yeah.
You are going to use the annual budget funding amount as collateral.
You use the annual budget funding amount only when you are unable.
No. Fifi, go and look at the agreement carefully. I have looked at it very carefully. It is the annual budget funding amount that will be used to collateralize on the basis of which you sign a subsidiary agreement. It is not on the basis of the return from the investment. No.
No, I'm not talking about return from invest. I'm saying that the payments that is due back the Chinese, the Chinese are actually not interested in your annual budget funding amount. They are interested in security of oil being given to them. And they are ready to pay for this oil approved market rate.
No, the agreement is very clear. You sell oil to the Chinese, you have to deposit some of the reserves that's going to the annual budget. So if it were any other revenue, it would be different. It is specific about annual budget funding amount because we have to sell oil to the Chinese.
So Mr. Kwete, if this is the case, then this loan may not come after all.
This loan certainly is coming because, I mean, his interpretation completely differs from the way we view it. I believe, to be honest with you,
my advice is
that's why off the top.
for the government to go back to the Attorney General and also go back to the Chinese and find out, because from all indications, that is a violation of the agreement. And I don't think it would be in the interest of Ghana for some other person to take that to court. I think the government should review it, because we have an Attorney General, and I'm clear in my mind that we are in violation.
We certainly will come back on that particular issue. As I told you, I'm here to look at your statement in detail. We are here to actually discuss it as a group, so clearly we'll be able to come back to that and clarify to the country that what we've done is above board.
All right, Mr. Kuti, just hold on, because
you should look at it, because
I'd like you to hold on, because
on the IMF matter.
Yes.
Let me see. The act of borrowing has occurred prior to discussions with IMF, and that is the issue. It's not that you don't have room to negotiate, but before you do that, you should have sought the approval. That was not sought. They have disbursed 94 million, and under IMF rules, that is difficult. You may go and argue that
Fedok, you and I have to allow the IMF to make that statement, and not you in the end.
Okay, so briefly. Hello.
That's why we've been discussing with the IMF. Now, if IMF has concerns, their rules are being breached, we should allow them to make...
Okay, so let's move a bit away from the IMF. Dr. Kotel said briefly, he also made a comment at the press conference that the government is, you know, engaging in double payments for some road construction works. Is that the case?
In one of the projects, there are about three roads. In Sawam, Achimoto, Fancor, Medina, something. The government has already gone to raise bonds to pay the contractors on that project, over 300 million new Ghana cedis. But one of the projects is requesting a loan for these same projects, and that's our concern. But if you're going to raise bonds to pay, and the event was addressed as a castle where the contractors were paid, so why are we asking the Chinese to give us money for the same project that we've already raised bonds to pay for?
All right, Mr. Kwete, is that a case?
We have.
I don't know the details of what he's talking about. As I told you, okay, I was unwilling to comment on some of these issues until I've seen the press statement in full detail. So we will make our comment after we have analyzed what he has to say vis-a-vis what he's
saying. No, that would be good.
All right. Then thank you to you both. Thank you so much for talking to us tonight. Dr. Kotel is the MPP spokesperson on finance in Parliament, and Fifi Kwete is the Deputy Minister of Finance. We appreciate your time tonight. Have a good night. Thank you so much. And that's, you're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. A couple of text messages that have come. This one from Tuama Joshua, Sanjeri in Northern Region. He says, Mr. Sari, the MPP lacks the 2012 campaign message. Therefore, they want to use lies to deceive the good people of Ghana. Long live NDC. Long live Behind the News. This one also from Ibrahim Nalerugu. MPP will forever remain confused. From Ilyasu in Tamale, Abraham, what measures has the EC put in place to ensure that the biometric registration doesn't end up tearing the nation apart? The EC must be fair and work to satisfy the stakeholders in the election. From Babamos and UDS, criticizing the Chinese loan by the MPP lacks merit and should not be taken seriously by Ghanaians. The SHS pupils perform poorly because they use almost all their learning time watching films. From Aberenga George in Tamale, this government does not seem to be getting everything right. First it was the STX, and now it is Chinese $3 billion loan. From Zach Yape. From Joshua, Northern Region, Abraham, the schools are more than the teachers, and the few teachers are not motivated. Please advise the colleges to admit more SHS leavers and train them for the sector. You're listening to Behind the News. Now, we now go back to Parliament and want to speak to the majority side. Alfred Abayate is the deputy chairman, I believe, of the Finance Committee in Parliament, and he's from the majority side. Good evening to you, Mr. Abayate. Good evening to you, Mr. Abayate.
Good evening, sir.
Good. Now, what does the Petroleum Revenue Management Act say with regard to collateralizing our oil for loans?
I Actually, I don't have the, but I think the if I will quote, I may not quote it well, but I think section 18, subsection 7 of the, I don't,
yes.
The,
you can just summarize it.
Management Act provides that the annual budget funding may be used as collateral for debt and other liabilities of government for a period
of 10 years.
I think for a period not more than 10 years or so after the commencement of this act.
But with an,
I think in brief that is what it says. I don't have the book. I came with my things. I mean, I've been trying to look for this thing. I don't know.
Okay, but then, if that is the case, are you also aware that Parliament approved the Chinese loan, which has a period of 15 years, more than the 10 years?
Can I talk? Yes, Parliament approved the loan, but nowhere was it stated categorically that we are going to use the oil money as a collateral for the loan.
Mm.
Yes.
So what kind of collateral did you do?
For the period, I say, it is we... Parliament nowhere. In fact, I am trying to organize myself. You know, my things are many. When you told me about an hour ago that I will be coming in, I was trying to look for the Revenue Management Act and this. Nowhere. And I haven't come across it yet in the agreement which has been laid to the House, on the parliamentary memo. And the agreement on the 3 billion loan.
So what did we use to collateralize this loan?
I would say, you see, it's a concessionary loan, and the issue is this. Let me be frank here and say this, that if we are not interested in the development of the country, we must shut up. We went to the same Chinese people and we took a loan for the Bui Dam and we use our cocoa, 50,000 tons a year, and we are doing it.
Mr. Abayate, my understanding is that the Chinese asked us to make sure that this agreement does not violate any laws of the land.
That is what I'm saying. And the agreement we have entered into has not violated any law of the land.
So what did we use to collateralize the loan?
Those who told you that we have used, those who raised the point for you, and we are taking on, the MPP people who organized the press conference should be the best people to say it.
They say it is the
I
oil.
I want to say it on fact that they are not interested in the development of the country.
Yes.
This thing that is being done by the NDC government. If we have changed the things they have entered into, for instance, the landing beaches, the secondary free zone site, the retrospect for the railways and all those things, if we have gone against it, they will have raised an issue.
Yeah, Mr. Abayate, the question I'm asking.
That,
hello, I'm sorry, sir.
Can I finish and you come in? Because President Mills says that Ghana is for us Ghanaians. So something which is being done by the previous government should be followed and completed before new things are doing. They know for sure that when this thing is done, it is for the development, infrastructure development of the country. And I don't see why. You see, if I will come in, when we were doing this agreement, they raised series of questions and all the documentations were brought. Even the agreement was withdrawn and relayed with everything that they requested from. And
okay,
the sector ministers were involved. Today, that the thing is materializing. You see where they are coming from.
Mr. Abayate,
this is not the hairdressing saloon loan.
Mr. Abayate, just a brief. We don't have much time, but then the MPP says it is the oil we have used to collateralize the loan. You say it is not. So I would just be grateful if you could tell me what exactly we are using to collateralize this loan, and then we can end
it. You see, my dear brother, we are the loan... Yes, please, let me, I beg you, if you can give me a minute. I want to give you the figure of this thing. The thing is in various parts. We have the loan is, the tranche A is 1.5 billion. The tranche B is 1.5 billion. The grace period for the first one is up to 5 years. And the second one is up to, the tenor of the first one is 15 years with a grace period of 5 years. So it means 20. The second one is 10 years with a grace period of 5 years. That is the total facility of 3 billion. And he says that counterpart government funding, government of Ghana is expected to provide 15% counterpart funding. This contribution will be paid from an owner contribution account that will be established as a sub account under a main collection account into which government of Ghana will deposit funds towards repayment of the facility. You see, as proposed earlier in this memorandum, in order to avoid the delays often associated with disbursement from the concession fund, it is recommended. recommended that the repayment be made out of the ABF, so out of the annual budget funding account. You see, this is what is in the paper, and okay. This is what I have read to you.
All right. Yo, then on that note, we thank you very much for tonight. I'm sure that the debate will continue. Listening to Behind the News, it is live on Radio Ghana in Accra and on the internet at gbcghana.com. Parents whose wards wrote the BECE for the 2010-2011 academic year may be sitting on thorns as they still don't know the fate of their wards. For candidates who got good aggregates, they are not certain of getting the schools of their choice. The Ghana Education Service has not yet released the computerized selection and placement. However, a report in an Accra Daily newspaper indicates that more than half of the candidates who wrote this year's BECE failed to get admission to senior high schools and technical institutes. These candidates could not get aggregate 30 and below to meet the placement criteria for admission. Is it a confirmation of the assertion that the junior high school system is a failure? Behind the News finds out from the Director of Basic Education and Acting Deputy Director General of the Ghana Education Service, Stephen Edu. Good evening to Mr. Edu. Welcome to Behind the News. So, can you confirm the report? Can you confirm this report that more than half of the candidates for this year's BEC could not qualify for placement?
By the placement criteria, yes. By the placement criteria.
That is, you should have aggregate 30?
Yes.
So, if they are not going to be placed in any school by the computerized system, is there any other way that they could be placed?
Yes. See, let me explain a little. If you compare the past, you used to have what we call as common entrance examination. And that common entrance examination started with sometime even after GHS, middle form one. So from there, people could just go out there to the senior high school. That was that time. And it wasn't the fact that all the students were doing the examination at the same time. So starting from middle school one, then people start going to the senior high school until they get to the final year, that's middle form four. And then those who will be able to go to senior high school will go, and then those who will not will also take to other means. So if you look at the constitution we have at the country now basic education is compulsory by law, which means everybody will have to complete 11 years of basic education. That is the cause of the matter. So which means that everybody will have to complete. So the BECE examination that we have is for both placement and certification. And the expectation is not that all Ghanaian children who complete junior high school will have to go to the senior high school. That is not it. The criteria is that some will go to the senior high school and then some will also get into other job opportunities or enter into the apprenticeship and whatever.
What kind of job opportunities are there for junior high school graduates?
Yes. That is what I'm saying, that it's not just going into job, but going into some trade or some apprenticeship program. That is why the government...
Such as what?
Hmm.
What kind of apprenticeship?
Apprenticeship. That's why we have introduced the apprenticeship program. So the government right now is supporting the apprenticeship program. So those who will not go to the senior high school can go through the apprenticeship program. With the apprenticeship program, they go to learn the different trades. And then from there, we have made even the convert in such a way that even those who go through this apprenticeship, if they still want to go to the senior high school, there will be an avenue for them to go.
Do you not think, Mr. Edu, don't you think that the junior high school system has failed? Because when this program was starting, what we heard was that JHS graduates can set up their own workshops, they can even employ themselves and employ others, you know, because of their workshops and all that. Now, we do not even see any workshop anywhere. They finished junior high school and they have no technical skills.
Yeah, I think I will concede, not conceding that the junior high school has failed entirely, but I think there are a lot of teething problems with the junior high school system. Because, you know, in the previous years, you used to have the continuation schools where after Form 2, they start to learn some of the trades and other things. And so with the introduction of the junior high school, the expectation was that these students will go through a number of competence skills and whatever. But unfortunately, That has not been the trend. I think that is the unfortunate side of the junior high school.
You made reference to the fact that during the common entrance time, students who have been failed in Form 1, middle school Form 1, had an opportunity to rewrite in Form 2. It is also with the BCE, is it?
Yeah. You see, the BCE examination, you see, the whole concept about the junior high school, I think we need to look at it as a country. You see, if you look at the common entrance examination, that we use the criterion reference. So you could see that the common entrance, if you remember very well, I can still even remember the marks that I got. That if you had over 250, then at least you can go to a senior high school. But anything below that, you could not go. If you ask many people to the command, they will tell you the scores that they gained. That was a criteria.
Yes, I remember mine. But yes. Mr. Edu, don't you think that this is a serious issue we should be looking at? Because if you have more than half of the candidates not qualifying for SHS, and this apprenticeship program, I don't know how many of them can have access to that.
Yes.
So what is the future of these kids like?
Yes, that is why I am saying that we need as a country to look at the whole concept of the junior high school system. Because we started discussing the issue. Because, you see, that is why we have the various programs that were supposed to be done at the junior high school. But unfortunately, we are not having the practical aspect. In fact, that is where the problem is, because we have this design and technology. We are doing it all right. But unfortunately, we don't have many of these schools just doing the practicals for the students to gain that competency that we expect them to
gain. But if that was the program and we are not doing that, whose duty is it to make sure that it is done? Is it a ministry? Is it a GES? Why are we lost focus?
It's a country decision. Now the ministry is doing its best. If you look at there's a COVID program that is looking at the whole issue about those who are not able to enter into the senior high school. Just last 2 weeks, we had a meeting and we were discussing how best, not only the junior secondary school, but even when you take the senior high school, how many go to the university. So you could see that there's always a big gap. And you were even considering the number of people who start class 1. Compared to the number of students who even complete the senior high school, there's a big gap. And then from the senior high school to the university too, there's a big gap. So we held a meeting to look at what top guard that we could put in place to ensure that all those children who are missing out of all these formal programs are provided some programs, at least to be able to manage the system.
So we are
looking at that seriously.
Yes. And having looked at that, do you have the statistics for dropouts?
Yes, we have.
Can you
but right
them
now, I cannot tell. But we have, if you compare, because the statistics we have is that just about 13% of the children enter into the university.
13% of those who begin from class 1?
Yeah, begin from class 1, yes. And if you look at
the 87%, where do they go?
Yes, where do they go? That is what we are talking about. And then if you look at from the junior high school, if we consider this 46-something%, it means the other people also have to be taken care of. You see, so the problem is not that the senior high school should take care of all these people, but the point is that what do we have in place to take care of all those people who miss out of these formal line? Because we have slow learners, and not all people will be able to get into the university, but those who will not be able to get there, what do we do for them? That is why the COVID is taking care of some of these things from the junior high school up to the university level. So it's a whole holistic approach that we are now looking at to see how best we can incorporate all those people into the system. So it's something that we are looking at as a country, and we are working within the industries. The committee that we have set up, for instance, we have industries, we have all the other people in, so that we can draw up a program to take care of all these people. So the point is not that they have failed, but we have failed these children because we have not provided avenues for them also at least to take care of some of the things that is happening.
All right, Mr. Edu, I'd like you to...
We are working on that.
I'd like you to hold on because you say you are working on that. I'd like you to be telling us when I come back to you what exactly you are doing, because the future looks quite bleak for Ghana's children. But then, before I move away from you, have you released the placements?
It will be out by tomorrow.
Oh, I see. Okay, so hold on. Let's listen to a parent. Mrs. Florence Osafo-Kisi is on the line. Good evening to you, Mrs. Osafo-Kisi. Hello, Mrs. Can you hear me, please? Okay, yeah, you have a ward who has finished GHS?
Yes.
And what aggregate did he get or she get?
08. He had 08.
Oh, so you do not have a problem with placement, I'm sure.
No, I will not.
Are you anxious?
I'm anxious for the placement. I'm anxious about that one.
Why are you anxious? Because your kid had 08.
Yeah, because I wanted to get a first choice. That's my...
To get what?
Yeah, a first choice.
And why are you scared he or she might not get it? Is it a boy or a girl?
A girl.
Why are you not sure she'll get it?
Well, today when I read the papers and there was a caption which said about 52 schools have been oversubscribed. Well, first they said half, about less than half passed. Fine. Therefore, there are vacancies for, and then 52 schools, if I'm right, I mean, I stand for correction, have been oversubscribed. Then I was like, what is happening?
Okay.
I don't know. Wow, that I understand the two.
All right.
Statements.
Okay. Hold on. Let's ask. Listen to Mr. Edu. Mr. Edu, what does that mean? That 52 schools have been oversubscribed. What does that mean?
Yeah. What it means is that if you take Wesley Gates, for instance, they have vacancies in SH1 for only 300 candidates. But the number of children who choose that place is getting to over 9,000.
And they all passed?
And they all passed. So which means that a large number of people who choose Wesley Guest will be displaced.
So what criteria is going to be used by the placement system?
That's the scores. We use your scores from the 6 subjects.
Now what I mean is that 9,000 all qualify to be admitted into SHS, SH1.
No, that particular school.
Yes, I'm also referring to that particular school.
Yes.
So then, what criteria are you going to use to drop others, to eliminate those?
By merit. It's by merit.
What kind of merit?
So if the first person had maybe 400 as her score,
mm-hmm.
then we cut it from there to the 300. So where the 300 will end will be the last cut-off point for that particular.
And what happens to those candidates who...
Then they will be displayed to go into their second choice.
And that's going to make the second choice oversubscribed.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So you'll be displaying until you get to a place where you fit properly.
Do you foresee...
It's a displacement.
I'm sure you foresee a lot of challenges in the next few days.
The challenges will come, but that is why we are pleading with parents and all to help so that we can build all these other schools into higher level schools that everybody will prefer.
What do you want the parents to do in building these schools? Is that not the government, preserved?
Yeah, the government is doing very well. If you compare the schools which are now being oversubscribed, like Wesley Guest, if you look at the contribution of the parents, compared to maybe this village senior high school. You see, there's a big difference. You see, in Ghana, we have a big problem with between the rural and the urban. The gap is just too big. So that is why we all need to put our efforts together to bring up all the other schools so that we can have very, very good schools across the country. Because if you think about the over 500 schools that we have, and we are talking about 52 being oversubscribed, it's a big problem.
Okay, I'll come back.
Out of 500.
I'll come back to you, Mr. Edu. Just hold on briefly. So, Mrs. Okay. Kisi, did your daughter choose Wesley Girls?
No.
Which school did she choose, if you can tell us?
St. Roses.
St. Roses. Mr. Edu, is St. Roses also oversubscribed?
It's also oversubscribed because St. Roses cannot take more than even 250.
So, Mrs. Osafo Kisi has a problem.
The number of students who choose St. Roses is not as big as those who chose St. Wesley Guest.
Mrs. Osafo Kisi, so you have a challenge on hand.
Wow.
And what's the second choice?
Yes, can you tell the second choice?
Krobo Girls.
Is it oversubscribed?
Not as Wesley Guest.
But oversubscribed also.
So if she doesn't get St. Roses, it's likely she will get Krobo Girls.
Mrs. Osafo Kisi, thank you very much for talking to us and wish you all the best. May your child get St. Roses or Krobo Girls. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Mr. Edu, you're talking about you working on the situation.
Yes.
How about the curricula for basic schools? Who works on that?
We have a whole division that works on the curriculum.
But why did the division abandon the practical aspect? Is it a matter of funding?
Yeah, funding is one of them. It's not abandoned entirely, because if you look into the curriculum, there's an aspect of practical, but the challenge is we don't have the funds. In fact, funds is one of the critical areas, because if you look at all the practical areas like Greek, like the technical, the vocational, we need to really get all these schools installed.
So since the mid-1980s, when this program started, we've been looking for funds to improve on the practical aspect of the curricula, and we've not had it yet.
Yes, you remember that in 1987, all the schools were supplied with some few items. And since 87, I don't think we've had enough facilities for all these schools. And that is the biggest problem we have with the junior high school system.
Let's listen to civil society. Mr. Edu, our privileges is still okay. Hold on. Right. Leslie Tete is the national coordinator of the Ghana National Education Campaign Coalition. He's joined us. Good evening to you, Mr. Tete.
Good evening, Francis.
Well, my name is Abraham. I'm not Francis.
Abraham.
So what's your reaction to the Daily Graphic headline today?
Well, I think, and good evening to my good friend, Mr. Edu. I think it's a great concern to all of us as a nation, and particularly for those of us in civil society, because we believe that our role is also to complement what is being done to strengthen public basic education in the country. So we are really, really concerned about these results. And our key concern is that this issue of BCE pass rate has been raging for about 10 years now. The pass rate for those who have a grade 6 to 30 has hovered around 50 to 60% for some time now, and it is also confirmed by some of the poor results that we have had for the National Educational Assessment for English and Mathematics. So, like Mr. Edu said earlier on, there's a need to do some comprehensive review of the BCE system itself. That is the basic education system itself, and also to look at what remedial actions are in place to ensure that children who are identified to have some weaknesses in basic literacy and numeracy skills are beefed up before they get to the place of writing their terminal examination at the BCE. We should also work hard to ensure that teaching and learning materials get to the schools and they get there on time, textbooks and other things. These are challenges we've had, which are still raging and have to be addressed.
So, Leslie, from where you stand, do you think the problem is with the placement system or in the whole educational system that will have to be overhauled?
I think that the placement system is just a symptom of the problem, because you have people enrolling from the basic level. We have a large chunk of our students in some communities in rural areas who are not having access to teachers for the time that they need to have. We have the situation where some of there are issues with the methodologies in terms of who is supervising the teachers to ensure that the writing is being taught. So there are weaknesses in the structure of the system that has to be addressed. And if they are not addressed, it's likely we'll have poor results. Because in 2010, the percentage of people who qualified to enter into the secondary school was 49%. This year, from what we read from the graphic, it's about 46.7%. That tells us that things are declining and we have to pick up quickly.
Okay, let's just hold on. Mr. Edu, so these are the reasons he's giving, but from the GES point of view, why are Ghanaian children failing their exams?
I think he's mentioned a number of the factors that are contributing to the performance of our children. You know, when the education started over the years, even starting from 1961, you see, the emphasis has been on access, trying to get the children into the school. If you remember, even in 1961, we had a large number of people going to school, and there were problems with infrastructure and whatever. We are still living with some of these problems. Now, in the when the education reform 1987 also started, we also had similar problems. So we could see that emphasis has been more on access, which is affecting the quality. And it goes, you see, that is what people see. You see, quality is something very difficult to measure.
So I suggesting that we should move away from, Mr. Edu, I'm sorry, I suggesting we should move away from that policy of access.
Yes, that is what we have to do that. But you see, the point too is that if you don't also take care of the access, it means you are going to have a number of children who will be out of school. So we have the two together. But the access, it goes, if right now we still have some schools without furniture and whatever, then you could see that we still have a number of problems that we have to look at. Now, you go to some of our village schools, if you really take statistics of all those who could not make it, most of them, I can say that about 90% of them are coming from the rural areas. And that is a fact. So, which means that we need to really look at our rural setups and see the schools that are there, because most of the challenges are coming from there. You go there, apart from the problems in the school, there are also problems within that particular community whereby we are not even getting the teachers there. You put the teachers there, either they go within short time, they leave the place. We've tried a number of strategies at least to get the teachers there. We are having problems there. So you could see that that's why I said from the beginning that it looks like there's too big a difference between the rural and the urban in this country. And we need to, as a country, to look at it so that we can address that particular challenge. If we are able to do that, we are going to get very qualified teachers to these rural areas. We are going to get the facilities there. There are even some places you take the books there, you wouldn't even know where to keep the books. Now that we are even talking of ICT, we just went around recently, and you could see that whilst in the urban areas, they have facilities, they have room to take care of all these things. You go to the rural areas, there are challenges.
All right.
You could see that the government is doing a lot. These schools and the trees, every year we are putting up buildings, but the population, because of the increases here and there, it's a big challenge.
Trigger, well, but I believe that Ghana is
a country we need to look
at. I believe Ghana is not too big to manage. Thank you very much, Mr. Edu.
You're very welcome.
For talking to us tonight. Stephen Edu is the Acting Deputy Director General of the Ghana Education Service. Briefly, Leslie, so do you also think, I mean, civil society, that this education reform is a failure?
Well, we think that we have not changed our ways very much. Although we designed a system that was supposed to pick up for those who were not going to go into the, in quotes, academic way, we didn't put enough resources and enough systems in place to create opportunities for those people so that when they finish the junior high school level, they will have opportunities in the other sectors. So
all right, Mr. Tete, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Leslie Tete. I understand your name is, for talking to us tonight. He's from the National Coordinator. He's the National Coordinator of the Ghana National Education Campaign Coalition. This was Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Some of your text messages. Why couldn't Mr. Bayate tell us what was used as collateral for the 3 billion Chinese loan, Gabi Anochi Inenchi? Monitoring and supervision should be intensified to transfer overstate teachers who are redundant in the GHS, Frank in Volta region. How can students pass when teacher salaries could not take them for 2 weeks? From MEC KNUST, it is surprising to always hear the teacher being blamed entirely for the falling standards of it in education. Meanwhile, the government does not always fulfill its mandatory role in satisfying the needs of the teachers. Mohammed Sani, Upper West. The Nils Mahama government has failed Ghanaians. They always go for unnecessary loans to satisfy themselves. From Kadiri, Ahrahman Damongo. It is the duty of the president to maintain peace in Ghana, but what the EC is doing cannot bring the peace that we are all looking for in 2012. Abraham, the minority has no point because the purpose of the loan is better than all the IMF conditions in the Act of Laws, which the lawmakers themselves do not take serious. Jonah in Kumbungu says that students are failing the BEC because most teachers have not been paid. 2 years after appointment, the government must do something about this. Hamid Usaidu in Pusiga, Abraham, I cannot understand why political leaders will not stop borrowing and start managing our own resources from Makante, Mathi and Yendi. The court's ruling in favor of the EC today must not be seen as a victory for the EC, but for democracy. Mohammed Ibn Hassan, Sekendi Takravi. Thank you all for the text messages you sent. Tomorrow we'll be expecting some more from you. We must apologize for inability to treat the EC story. We were unable to get the acting director of public affairs of the Electoral Commission on the phone. We tried, but we couldn't reach him, and that's why we couldn't do that story. Thank you very much for being with us tonight on Behind the News. This program is produced by Kingsley Obintre, Christopher Asiedu, Baitagama, and Edmond Tete. Production assistant Victoria Ahaji, and Behind the Machines tonight, Hannah Osubenba. My name is Abraham Asari. Have a good night.